From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's February 19th, 2021. You're listening to the best PokerCast still surviving. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
What are we doing, man? What are we doing?
We finally got to the point of the show where we have nothing to say right at the beginning.
So. We just got nothing to say to each other. We're just like, what is going on here?
I guess I could have wished you a happy Valentine's Day, maybe? President's Day?
I don't know what to say anymore.
Can't even celebrate Mardi Gras this year, so. Yeah.
Poker rooms are opening, so we'll get to that later. So that's good news, right? That's the good stuff.
Well, I'll tell you who had the hardest job this week, Chris, and it is Mo Nuwara.
Yeah.
Who he took over Poker News' annual poker predictions for the new year column. They've always written this. Well, not always, but for a long time they've written, you know, what to expect for this year in poker. And wow, that's a tough job for poor Mo there, right?
So, that's right.
We still have so much uncertainty over COVID, although Fauci said we'll have the vaccine by April. So.
And then he said July, right? Didn't he like – no, no. Who? Oh, no. He said by April.
And then, if you want it, you can get it. And then the herd immunity will finally take place like in August. That's what I heard he said. So,
but if they all – everyone obliges.
It changes every week. So. Yeah.
Don't leave it out to the people in Naples, Florida. Otherwise, we'll never get out of this.
That's right. So we still have no idea what to expect this year. So poor Mo did his best. And so he offered a few actual predictions this year. And again, not criticizing him. I wouldn't have any predictions either. But more of a roadmap to the bumpy return to normal. And normal is always in quotes going forward for the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
We remain on. So first one, he said, while there have been scattered big tournament series, only a few more are planned right now. You told me to break this up.
What I'm confused about is like when I read it, I thought, is this a prediction of his or is it just fact? If it's fact, it's not really predicting anything. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, I guess what he's trying to get at is that big tournament series are not back in big form. How's that?
Okay.
All right. And he does not expect it to be. You know, at this time of the year, we would have already had lots of details in the World Series of Poker, probably not a firm schedule, but we would have known how many events and what new things they had and actual dates of it, and we have none of that.
Right.
And again, not a criticism to World Series of Poker, just the reality of the world we live in now, right?
Right.
So, it does not seem that big-time tournament poker will be coming back. Let's tell you this, back up. We can't say for certain that big tournament poker will be back by the end of the year right now.
Right.
It's too big of a leap to make, right?
Can we say anything for certain in life, though?
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Thank you.
Death and taxes, I've heard, but, you know.
Horseshoes, leaners, something like that. I don't know what the hell that means, but.
the Hard Rock down here in Florida just had a series. They had, I think it was more than 1,500 people in their main event, which was a pretty big success, considering that there aren't that many big ones going up. But I think they said there's only one more WPT even on the schedule right now. Heartland's not doing anything. The circuit events are all online right now. So that's kind of where we are. It doesn't seem like that's going to change much anytime soon.
Okay.
I guess that's what Mo's getting at, right?
All right. So he's saying status quo for what it is right now, few and far between.
Smoke them if you got them.
Right.
And if not, then, you know, wait until you get a pack of six.
Okay, good. Somewhere.
There are, however, more smaller tournament series planned. So I guess that's the prediction here is that that's really where the tournament growth will be, at least initially in 2021, because it's a little easier to pull off a smaller tournament series. I read an article the other day that made a good point. The smaller ones are more desirable for locals and your regular players, right? So you're not encouraging people to get on planes and travel, which may not be the best optics at this point for your casino. So that's probably where you're going to see a lot more of those. And we even have here in town here that we've had some small series over the Silks just, I think, wrapped one this week.
That's correct.
So those I think you're going to see more of, and they may not be branded too. Like I think Bally's is doing one in Vegas that's not branded, other than, you know, with their own name, right? So, in the Mid-States Poker Tour is the only one really with a really robust schedule right now on the what they call the mid-major tournament series, right? So,
So
I guess you know, that's a pretty safe prediction that if you want to play tournament poker, it's going to be more or less of the big name events and more of the
smaller local things.
No name, new name.
Yeah,
no name,
new no name.
All right, online poker, of course, is enjoying new growth, which should continue at least until live poker returns to some sense of normalcy.
Yeah, he's not going out on the ledge on that one either.
That's your safe bet there, Chris.
Yeah,
taxes and online poker is going to continue to grow in the middle of COVID. but you know, so I guess a harder prediction would be how many more states are going to, get on board with this, right? That would be an interesting prediction to make, and I did not think of that until right now. So I'm not going to put myself on the spot, so I won't put you on the spot either.
Great.
Or Mo, for that matter. So, but that would be interesting. Is it maybe three more this year? It might be a good over under. But certainly more will come, I think. So,
I don't think you'd survive in Vegas very long.
you think lower?
No, it's just I think it was more of the confidence you had in the prediction. I'm like, yeah, that's not going to fly in the sports books.
Oh, man. and then, of course, we have to see how interstate compacts work as well, too. So if we can get Pennsylvania, Michigan, those states on board with New Jersey and Nevada and Delaware, and that'll make a big difference as well, too. But very hard to predict government, I will say that.
That is true.
Other than the fact that it will move very slowly on everything.
No, Michigan's on board now too, right? They're one of the.
I think they said that they're open to it or going to negotiate. So I don't. You mean operating? Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Operating, yes, but like being the interstate stuff.
Yeah,
it's possible. So
hopefully that will happen soon.
Yeah.
And then Nuara offers up one big prediction, which he admits might not happen this year, but he says he wouldn't be surprised to see GG Poker buy the World Series of Poker. Now. He's hedging his bets a lot on this, Chris, but I think he made a good point. It makes sense. I mean, you know, Caesars has been chopping the WSOP around, at least quietly, it seems like, for years now, and I haven't had a buyer. Obviously, this is a tough time to sell anything, but also, you know, when you're trying to reinforce your core business, which is not the World Series of Poker, you might be willing to entertain offers at a discount price for anything that can help you with your core business, right?
I never thought that they were shopping the actual World Series, though. I thought they were always just shopping the Rio so that it would move to Caesars. I didn't really think that they were selling the brand or the series itself. That's interesting to me.
Yeah, I had seen both reports. So
okay. I hadn't seen that, really. And, I mean, it makes sense. GG Poker seems to be the strongest thing out there now.
Well, that's what Mo said, is that obviously they teamed up on this year's World Series of Poker, which is, in quotes, is just like normal is, right? So so they are familiar with the brand. They've been working together, you know, and usually the baseball teams that know each other trade more often than the ones that don't, right?
Right.
So that kind of makes sense as well, too. So I don't know what the financial situation of GG Poker is and or what the World Series of Poker might be worth these days. If I was in Vegas, I'd say GG Poker maybe number one on the list.
Again.
How's that?
Yeah, that's great. Hey, see if GG Poker wants to buy our show.
Yeah, there we go.
We'll start with
that. Then we'll talk more about the WSOP later on after that.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly.
I wish I had more predictions. I have none, though. I'm not going to put myself on the...
Yeah, because we'll hold your feet to the fire, and you'll never be able to show your face in public again.
It is funny, though. I did have a conversation this week, because, you know, I'm campaigning, of course, so I'm knocking on doors, which is really weird in COVID. But surprisingly, people are opening their doors and talking to candidates. I'm all masked up and stuff, so doing it as safely as possible. But, you know, one in every 40 people ask me what I do for a living. And so I explain, you know, hey, our company is largely shut down right now. Hopefully we'll get it back going again. And she's like, but I would think people would want to play a lot of poker right now. And I'm like, they do. It's just, how do you do it safely? She's like, oh, that makes sense. Yes, that makes sense. So, it'd be interesting to see, particularly, I think, in some of these locals poker rooms, now that more and more of the 65 and older crowd are getting their vaccines. I mean, it's obviously been not easy to get your vaccine anywhere. Right. It's easier to get VIP concert tickets than it is get your vaccine appointment. But a steady stream of folks on my Facebook feed there are bragging about having their second shot now and ready to go out and enjoy life, right? So that might be the interesting driver here, especially like I said, the local rooms where most of your players, your at least your early morning crowd, is 65 plus. Interesting to see whether those rooms start seeing an uptick in players that now feel as invincible as one can.
Exactly. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. All right, Doug Polk and Daniel Negreanu both say they are moving on after the two finish their three-month-long high-stakes heads-up online poker match. Polk, a specialist in the format, won the match in $1.2 million over Negreanu, a more accomplished overall player but who had much less experience in the format. The match grew out of a long feud between the two players, but both say they now have more respect for the other after the match. Polk says he's no longer enjoying poker as he once did and is looking for new opportunities. Well, Negreanu has challenged Phil Hellmuth, who criticized Negreanu's play, to a heads-up match.
See, this is what's missing from our lives. We don't have feuds with people, right? I mean, can you imagine, if you think back over the last 10, 15 years we've been doing this, how many feuds Negreanu and Hellmuth and these types of people have had?
Yeah,
they've had feuds. And it's like, how do you even have a feud? So I guess you have to have like a presence publicly. You have to have a following. You have to be polarizing, you know, which I think we kind of have that going for us. You know, well, I don't know about you, but I seem to be an ass once in a while. So how come I haven't had any feuds over the last 15 years? I'm missing the feud. Maybe I could win $1.2 million and, you know. I just don't get it. It's amazing to me how many feuds Dan Negreanu has had. And now he's going to have another one with Hellmuth because Hellmuth was criticizing Negreanu, and these feuds are hilarious to me.
Well, you know, I think we saw a lot fewer feuds after Bran Stark sat on the game on throne, Iron Throne. So.
Oh, man. You know what? You're killing me. But, I mean, seriously, like.
I think this, you're right. So, I mean, on one sense, you don't want to see people fighting or having these arguments. On the other sense, from a theater standpoint, right, it does make people tune in and get more interested in the game. I mean, there's a whole reason. I mean, you know, I'm spending a lot more time with my dad now, and he's big into wrestling. He's always been big into wrestling, as it was called back when I was a kid, right?
Yeah.
That whole thing is built on made up feuds, right?
Oh yeah.
I mean, no one watches wrestling for the wrestling. It was funny because my dad was fast forwarding through all the wrestling to the trash talk and stuff, and I'm like, well, this is exactly what you do, right? So, you know, no one cares about the wrestling. They care about the, you know, who's challenging who to the next steel cage match, right?
Right.
So, I mean, so that's an industry that was completely built into multi millions of dollars with not really a real product other than contrived drama, right?
Yeah.
The whole reason that soap operas are on for 35 years, right? No one watches that for the acting. They watch it for whoever's marrying who now and divorcing who and slapping who, right?
And so it's hot. It's initially about the pretty people is what it is. Right? Looking at the pretty. That's why I like. They have such good demographics in wrestling too. It's because they always have the hot guys and the hot women up there, and you know the guys want to be them, and the women want to sleep with them, you know, that kind of thing, and vice versa. That's, you know, or whatever it is. That's what they kind of do. If you're into the guys, then you like the guys and you like looking at them, and if you're into the girls, you like the girls. You look, you know, whatever it is that you, it's all there for anybody who wants to tune in. You know, I'm not sure people are tuning into these poker feuds for that kind of thing though.
No, but I guess what I'm getting at is it generates interest. I mean, it didn't get me as interested. I mean, we haven't even talked about this on the show until now. It's over. We're going to wait 3 months, right? You know, I get updates every week, and I'm like, it doesn't sound very exciting to me. So, but maybe it was exciting to some of our listeners, so I assume it probably was. So, you know, it builds some more interest out there. Now, I'm not suggesting that we manufacture drama, like in wrestling, but I'm just saying drama does help sell tickets, right?
Oh, sure.
So it gave us, it gave those in the poker world looking for something to talk about to talk about. So, but more interesting to me is that Polk is only like, I think, 33 years old. Essentially, kind of saying, "Hey, I'm walking away from the game. You know, I'll still play from now and that time and now and then, like Vanessa Selps did years ago, right?" But he's ready to move on, and because he's not enjoying it. And it's such an important point that and this is one of the things that we've always said on the show with people like wanting to become pro, right? I mean, think about poker's fun now because you play it when you want to. It becomes a job when you play it because you have to play it, right? So it's nice to see somebody saying, "Hey, you know, I'm just not enjoying it anymore. I'm going to get out now," rather than start playing poorly because I'm miserable at it. So.
Well, you have to admit, I mean, well, first for me, in for how many years was I a sports editor? It ruined sports for me. I mean, I am burnt out. I barely even pay attention now, except, you know, when my favorite teams are, you know, going to playoffs or something, I want to root them on because they're my favorite teams. But it burned me out when you had to do it every day and know every stat and know how to spell everything and have every team's stat correct and all that. It was just too much, and then it burned me out. And even poker, I mean, guess how much poker we played?
Yeah.
Before we started the company. A ton. Yep. You know? How much do we play now? None. I mean, we haven't played in ages together. You know? We used to play together two times a week sometimes, depending on, you know, what was going on. We would travel together and play together and things like that. And now, I mean, because it's your business, it's a job. And, of course, now we're getting older and have different interests and stuff, too, that take us away from it. But in the heart of it, I was kind of like, oh, man. You know, I mean, I just, you want to play poker? I did it all week. I did it all month. I did it all year, you know. And so I can definitely see somebody, especially when you're young like that. You got the rest of your life ahead of you. You don't want to be sitting in a smoky table, even though I know it's not smoky, but you know what I mean. You just don't want to be sitting there next to guys with their ball caps on backwards, you know, and you got to figure out a way to get their money, you know, to make a living. And it's a grind, you know. I mean, a lot of these people, that's what they do. That's all they can do. And that's why they do it, you know. But if somebody has other irons in the fire, I can totally see them wanting to get away from it, like Doug Polk.
Yeah. And on the flip side, you have Daniel Negreanu, who will never be bored of poker, right?
Right.
And, he'll only be bored of poker if he doesn't have drama as part of it, right?
Right.
So you just finish this 3 months long thing where you get your ass handed to you. And then you just want to jump into another one with somebody else that you're fighting with. So it's just really interesting to see the personalities at play here.
Yeah, exactly.
Not surprising at all. And I probably would be more interested in a Negreanu-Helmuth match because, you know, I haven't invested a lot of time in Doug Polk over the years, so I don't know as much about him. But I could definitely see the trash talking being very strong with a Negreanu-Helmuth match. So
yeah, that would be – because that would be epic. They've been doing that for 20 years.
Yeah.
Jawing at each other.
So we'll see what happens.
All right, I'm paying attention.
All right, GG Poker has teamed up with Flip, a Facebook group of female players totaling more than 3,500 to help promote women playing poker. Under the deal, Flip members will get special benefits and exclusive tournaments on GG Poker. Dava Byrne, the founder of Flip, has been appointed by GG Poker as an outreach and community advocate.
This is great. It's great news.
Yeah, all these stuff kind of always helps a little bit as you go along. I mean, now GG Poker obviously is overseas, so not much of a deal for Americans here, but starts. But I, the big thing is I like the outreach and community advocate role.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think it's that rather than, you know, we've seen a lot of these partnerships over the years with all of our women's groups here, you know, Lips and High Heels and some of the other ones as well too, right? Mm-hmm. But they all tend to like fall apart at some point if there's no like real buy-in with the bigger partner. So the fact that you're having somebody whose role is to, you know, try to find those new players and create a product that caters to them is a smart business move, I think.
It would be interesting too if GG Poker did then t- take over the World Series of Poker.
Yes.
And then what they would do for the female group, the female players in general, with their event and what they do there and stuff. So, even though it's, like you said, it's not here now, it will be one way or the other.
Absolutely.
That's very good.
All right, here's this week's update on casino and poker room reopenings. Greektown Casino Hotel in Michigan has reopened its poker room, and Live Hotel and Casino Philadelphia has opened its entire resort, the 29-table poker room. And not accounting for the recent temporary closings, we now have 218 reopened poker rooms in the United States. And remember to go to antiupmagazine.com/reopen to find out all the details now. If you have any updates, email us at editor@antiupmagazine.com and look for that weekly e-blast in your inbox.
All right, very good. Annie Updates, Papes, the Annie Up Fans free online tournament series on PokerStars Play Money site, is available everywhere. Details on how to join can be found at bit.ly/PAIPS. Games are on the 6th, 16th, 26th of every month and rotate disciplines with a main tournament followed by a second chance event. PokerStars lets you claim 15,000 free chips every 4 hours. Join the Annie Up Fans group Facebook page and post within the group to get feedback on hands, ask call the floor questions, or just discuss anything poker. Check out our 11 vintage Annie Up logo designs on merchandise at annieupmagazine.com/shop to buy t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and much more with your choice of Annie Up Magazine, Annie Up Pokercast, and Annie Up Pokertour logos. If you have a hand of the week, listener spotlight, or call the floor submission, email us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com or post within the Annie Up Fans group on Facebook. We get to complete an O'Malley's move today. I always love that. So here comes part one, and we'll refresh our memories. See you on the other side.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are playing $2, $5 No Limit Hold'em at our regular casino cash game. The game is six-handed, and we've only been here for about an hour, so we haven't got a great grasp on the game, and the one maniac just left, so it's playing a bit differently than it was minutes earlier. We bought in for $500 and are down $75. The blinds post, the under the gun makes it $15 to go. He has been in on a lot of hands, but hasn't shown down any. He seems to know the game fairly well, as he sits with 660. There are two folds to us on the button, and we look down at the King of Diamonds, Queen of Diamonds. We call. The small blind folds, but the big blind calls, and we are going to a flop with $47 in the pot. It comes down the Queen of Clubs, Nine of Clubs, Six of Hearts. The big blind checks, and the under-the-gun bets $30. I regret not either 3-betting or folding pre-flop, but since it's six-handed, I think a fold pre-flop is too tight. I'm going to raise for value and a bit of range definition. We make it $75 to go, leaving us with $335 behind. I'd also like to force the big blind out. The big blind folds, but the under the gun calls. There's now $197 in the pot, and the turn is the 10 of diamonds. The under the gun checks. I like a check here for pot control. If our opponent is on a draw, I can't see him folding to anything other than a shove, and that would be way too much at this point. Perhaps we want to get value from a draw? We've also picked up some equity in that a jack would give us a straight. The pot stands at 197 and the river is the tray of hearts. Our opponent bets again, this time for 100. What's the move?
Again, we check the turn for pot control, and that's what we got, so I think we have to call here.
Ah, good old-fashioned trap hand. Speaking of Negreanu, actually, right? We were talking about Negreanu earlier. I'll call, but it would be too easy to just call and hear and win. I think I just know we lost for some reason here. But I don't know if I can fold given the way that we played it and the comments that we've made. So I guess I'm calling, but I just have one of those hand of the week feelings that we're not doing good here. So here comes the result.
Don't go in there.
Hello again. I'm not sure I played this hand well at all. I can definitely see some mistakes. However, with top, second top, I don't know what I was expecting, and I don't think I can fold here. I checked the turn to keep the river bet I'd have to call reasonable, and a half pot bet is reasonable. We call. Our opponent says, is ace-queen any good? And tables ace-queen offsuit. Yep, we say, and muck. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, how bad did we play this one? I hope to see you on the felt.
If we made a mistake in this hand, it was playing king, queen for a raise pre-flop. But honestly, when you're six-handed, you can make a pretty strong argument that tossing king, queen on the button is too tight. I think the rest of the hand was played well, though, Mal.
Oh, wow, a trap hand that actually gets trapped. Go figure. I think this being six-handed and we're on the button, I think calling a raise with king, queen is perfectly acceptable. I think the raise after the flop might have been that mistake for me. I don't know. Maybe you just call there, like you said, for pot control again at that point, but because then I see what the aggressor does on the turn at that point. I don't know about that raise there and then moving on with it. I feel like if we just call the 30, then, you know, maybe he thinks, okay, why did he just call the turn? And then now you get to check it for just 30, and the river comes, the under the gun's knocking about 100 now. He might bet 60, you know, or 70, and then you can just call if you have. Then you know what I mean? It's just a pot control thing. I don't know if that raise was really warranted.
Well, and interesting, the end of the gun didn't re-raise us there. And that was a really solid play for him, I think, now knowing what we had, right? So,
yeah. I don't know, though. Are you, no matter what size the table is, I'm never really emboldened with ace-queen to re-raise unless I'm heads-up, maybe. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
but that flop, though, I mean, what are you really worried about on that flop? You've got top-top.
Yeah. I guess the draw is probably...
A couple clubs, a couple weird straight draws. There's really not much to worry about that are out there, so I... You know, if somebody wants to raise, I guess this is what I'm thinking. So we bet 30. Mal raised to 75. I want to find out if I'm up against a set, which would raise there, right? Probably with some of the...
Yeah, there's some coordination on that board.
It's there, right? Yeah. So I'd almost want to get whatever money I'm going to put in the hand in right now to find out just how strong I am. But the fact that he just called there... left open the door that we probably had the best hand. Of course, then we checked on the river. So very interesting, though. So at that point, then he knew at that point that, you know, we had his beat, unless, you know, a club or that straight card came in. So that's why he was able to bet with confidence on the river. But again, that's why you check for pot control, right? Yeah. So, I mean, if you would have bet on that turn, you're betting that $100 at least there, and then you're probably getting another amount of money in on the river. So.
It's interesting because I don't think we know what the end of the gun player has for a stack. I know he bets 100 on the end.
True.
But
yeah.
If we made it 75, I think he's looking at probably shoving.
Well, he has his covered, though.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh,
so
if he has his covered, that's right. Okay,
yeah,
so.
Our stack is the effect.
Yeah, so if he has like 500 and we're going to make it to something and we've already bet 30, and then we had a 45, so 45 out of the 500 to get down to 55. So, yeah, I mean, I guess your raise would be almost 50% of your stack at that point if you re-raised our 75 bet. And maybe you're thinking about shoving. I don't know if I want to put 425 in the before, you know, basically 425 in the middle on one pair. But, yeah, it's interesting. Maybe he called to think that, and that's why he checked the turn, thinking we were going to bet again and we had us trapped. But he didn't. He didn't bet the turn, you know, Mal. So it got checked around. Then the river, he's like, all right, so you were just trying to take it from me. I think I have the best hand. That's why he bets the river. Very interesting. Very interesting. It's a weird one-pair hand.
Yeah. We lost the pot, but we made the right decision based on how we set out to play. So.
Yeah, I don't know if I would have raised that initial bet. I think I just would have called. I mean, I have king, queen, I have... You know, I mean, again, if somebody's
raising... Well, I'm curious if you don't raise there, what happens? So, all right, so our raise was $45, so it cost us $40. I'm saying it cost us because we lost the hand, right?
Right.
So it cost us $45. The turn cost us nothing because there was no bets there. And then 100 on the end. So we end up losing 145 after the initial bet. So had we called that bet... now the under the gun is no longer scared of what we have, right? So I think he has to continue to press on the turn, because, you know, it's really hard to check for pot control when you're not out of position, right? So I think he's got to bet again, which is what, I don't know, 50, 45, 200 in the pot. So that's probably that $100 is on the turn now, right? And so what do we do then? Now do we raise on the turn?
Well,
probably
you know,
not,
unless,
right?
one, one, last, One last thing, though. There's not that much in the pot now. It wasn't a 75 bet. It was only a 30.
Oh, that's correct. You're right.
So that's 60 plus the 15, so you're at 30. So you're at 90 in the pot. The guy maybe at bets 45.
45, 50 bucks. Yeah, you're right.
So which is the 45 you would have bet on the... So I think it all comes out to the same, I think.
It probably comes out the same, yeah.
Yeah, it probably comes out the same.
You're probably right.
You're probably right. All right. Well, I don't know. It's just an interesting hand for one pair. But again, the king-queen, I'm fine with calling the raise pre-flop. It's the raise after the flop that I think got you into trouble. But.
And so I guess if you played it out that way, though, there is a case to be made for folding on that river, maybe. We didn't want to fold on this river because we checked for pot control, and that's what we got, right? We wanted to see the river for about 100 bucks, and that's what we did, right?
Yeah.
Now, if you're not checking for pot control and you're just playing along and you get to the end, and we both said it. I mean, I know it's O'Malley's move and hand of the week, so we kind of always kind of think we're going to lose, right? But if you think about it here, I mean, what are we beating at the end there? It's tough to come up with where we're beating. I mean, if they played it the way you're saying, I would not be surprised at all to see ace queen turned over by her opponent.
Yeah.
And if that's the point, then I'm like, all right, is it worth 100 bucks here to find out, to see the exact hand that I think I'm up against?
The other thing, too, to keep in mind, and we've talked about this often on the show, is when you're playing six-handed, shorthanded, and somebody raises under the gun, they're not raising under the gun a 10-handed table. They're raising under the gun as if under the gun really folded, under the gun plus one really folded, middle position. Yeah. You know, you're basically a middle position player. So what kind of hands can raise in middle position, you know? And then it's not – you don't think of it as ace-queen. You think a king-queen might be good there. You know, that's the thing. So – he could have just had jacks and raised there, and then c-bet, didn't believe you, so called your raise, and then on the turn we both checked, so now he's thinking you don't have a queen, his jacks are good, and that's why you called 100. So there are a lot of scenarios, I think, that you can envision in a six-handed game where your king-queen's good there, and that's why you make that call. But, you know, and there's only one scenario, really, it seems like, where you're not good, other than some weird straight got there for him because he was raising with king-jack or something, and then... you know, or whatever, or he got his set. But I think his set re-raises after we raised the 75. So, I don't know. It's an interesting hand. I think I could have folded or called either way on the end, but I probably did call just because in the moment you've got top pair, second kicker, and it's six-handed. You know, it's tough to get away from it. But, all right. Wow, I think that's the longest O'Malley's move in the history.
New record here.
Not a new record, just a record. Come on.
7 years doing the show, and we're still pushing the boundaries, Chris. All right, it's time with AdvancedPokerTraining.com Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at AntiUpMagazine.com. If you haven't won something from us in the past year, you'll get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. All right, our good friend Paul Garrison's kept us in business for the last month. This is his last hand, Chris, of the five hands that he's been sending us.
Okay.
Once again, as we said from the beginning of this series, he does not think this one is Hand of the Week worthy. So... we will have to see whether he is correct in that or not, but we will take that chance.
And you know what? If one out of five is bad, I mean, those are pretty good odds. You know, you're in the Hall of Fame, you get a hit, you know, that many times out of five. So I'm not going to complain if it's not a good hand of the week.
Yeah. All right, so once again, he's playing in the Bay Area, California, in a 1-1, $2 no limit table. That extra dollar blind is posted by the button, and you do have to complete the $4 if you want to stay in the hand, even if you're in the big blind. And, of course, there's no limit, so you can raise however much you want if you want to enter the pot.
Right.
In this particular hand, the under the gun player raises to $15, which he says is within the $12 to $15 standard for the table. He sits with squiggly 75 behind. The button calls with squiggly 100 behind, and we're in the big blind with just over 200, which was our original buy-in. And we have pocket kings.
Well, you know, if it were my dad, he'd call. Because he wants as many people as possible in the hand with him when he's got a hand like this.
That's not a good strategy.
And it's not a good strategy.
Just like dad knows that.
So I'm thinking we're raising. Generally, if it was a $15 raise ahead of me, I'm usually doing 3X. That would be 45. Now, how much do we have? Do you remember?
Just over 200. So we got the opponents covered here. So.
Okay, so here's the deal. One guy has about 100, one guy has about 75. If I was going to make it 3X, which is 45, and then add the 15 from the other caller, that would make it 60.
Yep.
One guy can only go for 15 more, and the other guy can only go for 100 more. So I would just shove.
Yeah,
There it is. End of the week. You're right, Paul. It wasn't worth it. Good night, everybody.
Yeah, it's a tough spot to be in with your opponent's money there because, again, generally speaking, you want to be heads up with Pocket Kings, but you also want to make some money, and there's no money to be made here with either one of these opponents, really. So, you know, at this point, you know.
Well, I mean, if I have a couple hundred bucks and I can take 175 down, that's basically doubling my buy-in, so that's good enough for me, but I don't think a raise is... Because then if an ace comes on the flop, then you're scared, then you're not going to get maximum value for the hand. But if you shove and somebody's like, well, I got to call, I only have 75 left.
Right.
Yep. You know? So I don't mind just shoving here.
I think that's the right play there because you don't want to spook yourself with an ace on the flop, right? So.
Or a coordinated board.
Yeah. All right. Let's see if he does that, then maybe this is not really hand of the week worthy. We'll find out. So, all right. Here says, I'm curious how you would have played this hand. Well, that's why you sent it to us, Paul. So, raising, obviously, but how much? He said, I didn't want to get to a flop with a hand holding ace, so I raised enough to put both players all in. So, there we go. See?
Yeah.
I thought with their stack sizes, I would get at least one caller, especially from the under the gun raiser. Unfortunately, I did not. They both folded.
Ugh.
Should I have raised for Squiggly $50 and maybe they would have come over the top or at least called to see a flop? All right, so this turns into a situation of the week because it's not handy, right?
Yeah.
But here's the thing. So, all right, so he asked Squiggly $50. That's kind of what you were talking about, right? So that would have been a normal raise if we were all deeper, right?
Right, about 50, 60, yeah.
But because it wasn't, we're not deeper. Now it's at that point, you know, again, so if you did that, the first player in, it has only 25 behind. You know, if he's going to call, he's going to raise all in at that point. And really, probably so is the other guy, too. If you're going to call 50, I mean, you're going to hold 50 behind.
Right, exactly.
So I don't think it really matters too much. I mean, I guess if you did that and then they decide to stay in, that they would have shoved at that point, so you would have got him in. Maybe there's a case there, I guess, but...
There's a kind of stop-and-go play, too, where you kind of just call the raise and then shove.
And then shove on the flop, yep.
But it just seems like the only hand that's going to call you on that shove is going to be... Well, there's only two hands. One that's
beating
you and not.
Right? Doesn't change anything.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you did the stop and go and you shoved on the flop and they both folded, it's the same thing, right?
Exactly.
Other than you had a little more heart palpitation because you have a flop now that may not be... what you wanted, right?
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was just, it's a tough stop. I mean, you're playing no limit hold'em here with limit stacks is the kind of the problem, I think, for your hand here.
That's
so.
The point, yeah. Well, they say that stack, what is it, the stack, what's the, what they call it the stack, the smallest stack at the table is the most you can
effective
have.
Stack.
Effective stack, yeah. See, I'm telling you, I'm getting too far away from the game, Scott. I can't remember the terms.
You're not effective when you come.
I'm ineffective with the effective stack lingo. Damn it.
Oh, man.
No, but really, I don't see any other way to play this. I mean, you could have called, but you might have gotten spooked. That's the thing. And then so if you knew that you wouldn't have been spooked, you know what I mean? You can't know that. And you can't know that they don't hold, you know, queen, and then you can get them to go all in and jack, and then you're going to get a three-way and you're going to win. But to me, it's like, all right. I'm going to make my normal raise because I'm in the big blind, too. That's the other thing they can consideration. If you're just calling, you're acting first the whole way after this. If you just did a call, kind of let's try to squeeze some money out of them gradually kind of thing. If it's a stop and go, like and Scott said, it's basically the same thing as just shoving now anyway. It's not a tournament. It's not, you know, this is, you know. So if I made it 60, the guy with 75 is going to be like, well, it's only 15 more. If I call this, I have to shove. The other guys can look at that and go, well, it's only 25 more now. I have to shove. And then you're back to where you started anyway. So really, you do what you had to do. You put them all in for 100 each, and that was it. And I wouldn't say this wasn't hand of the week worthy. I would say this was situation worthy.
Yes, situation worthy.
Right.
And the other thing to keep in mind, too, I mean, remember how many times that you play Pocket Kings and that ace comes? And either you chicken out of the hand or you get all in and the guy turns over ace king and you're like, oh, great, right? And you lose, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You got to keep that in mind, too. I mean, you always want to maximize value with these really big hands, but sometimes you're maximizing value by not losing the pot. So,
you know, it's not always a bad strategy to just shove when you have big hands like this because you're either afraid to get outplayed. Or you're afraid you're going to outplay yourself, outthink yourself.
Right.
You have to recall when we had Chip Jett on the show, he was in the in the office with us in the studio with Karina back in the day when we were at the Times. And he was like, for a couple of months, maybe even a year or so, I think what he said was every time he had aces, he just shoved. It didn't matter. And he had way more success with that than when he tried to get smart because he's such a good poker player, try to outmaneuver people and everything. I mean, and I'll never forget that. And we were sitting there and he's on my left and he's talking to us and he's like, I shoved. I just shoved whenever I saw pocket aces. And we were just like, whoa. And he's not, it's not that he's not a good player. He's a great player. Didn't he like win one of our NEA Poker Tour events once or go deep?
Yes. Yes, he did. He won the Venetian.
Yeah. So he's always been he's always played for a living. You know, Karina is now into real estate and she hasn't, probably doesn't play as much or whatever, but I mean, he's always made a living at it. And here's a guy who's a professional poker player with titles and everything. And sometimes when he looks at aces, he's just like, you know, I'm shoving. So there's nothing wrong with that with kings either. I would think when you're playing shorthanded or when you're playing a smallish game like this, you know what I mean? Don't overthink it. And then you'll get yourself to be like, oh, I just talked myself out of making more money, you know, or I talked myself into losing more money, you know. So I wouldn't fault for a shove here anyway, but it just seems like it's the right mathematical play anyway to me. We'd have to have Brent on the show to tell us how wrong we are, but our friend Brent Philbin.
You know, you're probably right. I mean, like, really, the math here kind of forced her hand on it, and ultimately, neither one of these players. I mean, if any of these players had anything, they would have called, right? So here's the other way we're looking at it. I mean, whatever flop would have come, unless it had a king in it, was going to be probably potentially dangerous for you if they were playing hands that they weren't willing to play for the set.
Right, exactly. Well, this is the last hand we have. I think we have one hand left.
No, we got another one in today. So we got two. So we're still going for at least 2 more weeks, Chris.
Yeah, because we'll have a new O'Malley's move next week. For that'll be one of the hands. And then the conclusion O'Malley is a week after that. And then that'll conclude it. That's it. That's the end of the show. Good night, everybody. Right? Perfect. It's symmetry. That's what we...
Oh, man.
If you don't send in the hands, the show don't go on, because Scott and I aren't playing poker. So I don't know what we would do for the hand of the week. We have to start showing images of hands, I think.
Man.
I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Locke.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@anteupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.